Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ailey Packham and we are still dreaming in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? Our performance on Monday night that saw us beat the champions Liverpool was probably our best of the season. And in a game that truly pulsated, there were many things to take away from it, including the extension of the Hinchelwood dynasty, with Jack entering the fray alongside his 17-year-old cousin, Harry Howe. And it was also a game that kept our European aspirations alive as we go into Sunday's final game of the season at Spurs, with a slim chance of a spot in the Conference League. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back a man who needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway. Put simply, it's just the bloke to save the club, and, you know, he's just been handed a lovely award, an outstanding contribution award, no less. Please welcome the one, the only, Dick Knight. Hello, Dick.
Hello, AD. You know, what an introduction.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I'm practicing for my Saturday night game shows. That's what I'm doing. So,
is it? Are you Ant or Dick?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm going for the Generation Game or.
Hang on.
Family Fortunes.
Are you going to do Bruce or are you going to be Larry Grayson?
Can I do a combination of both?
Or the other one? You can always be.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I'm just too.
Anyway, all I'm going to say is, Al, that door shut in my face a long time ago.
Well, didn't Jim Davidson do it as well?
We're not talking about him.
No, please.
Anyway,
don't.
Hello, Dick. Welcome back. It's been a long time since you joined us here on the Reverb Airwaves. And it's been quite a journey. And it's like, and with yourself, it's always. The journey's been part of it, but it was always there was always the destination as well. And when you look back across all the things that you're doing, when you go back to 1997, how do you look back at that now and think, bloody hell, where are we now?
I do. And basically, I'm not surprised by it because I knew that once we got the stadium, we would go to the Premier League. I was certain of that because the club had the potential. You know, I don't know how many people know, but the record crowd ever for a Brighton game was not at the, it will never be at the Amex because the Amex is about as big as it can be. And years ago, I stood in a crowd of 36,000 at the Goldstone Ground. And we've come a long way, baby, since then. So basically, I knew that as long as we got the stadium, and heaven hell did I know that it was going to take an unbelievable 14 years to get the stadium. I come from the land of make-believe fantasy, i.e. advertising. And I would never have made up a commercial that said this football team, you know, wanted to build a stadium. And what they did all the right things. They applied to their local mayor or local, you know, sort of...
local authority, you know, the planning department.
The local, you know, the local... I know it was the local authority, really. I'm just making it up. I'm just doing a little fantasy. So this little football club, you know, decided it would like to have a better stadium because it had been thrown out of the old one. And you know, 14 years later, we actually played the first game.
Yeah.
It's almost... well, it is totally unprecedented, as you know. And so now, because I knew I had to get the stadium and I knew we had to have the right sort of naming rights partner, that was very important as well. Because, you know, we weren't going to get a betting company because you know, I knew that the days of betting companies being able to put their name on a shirt were numbered, which of course they are now. Mm. And we've got a highly prestigious sponsor of the stadium and now the shirt. But of course, I also knew at the time when I negotiated that deal with the American Express that there was no way I would have almost like insulted them by saying, you know, will you put your name on our shirt? Because we were a League One club, a third level club. So I did the deal for the naming rights, and it was for that only. And I said, when we get to the Premier League, then it makes sense to put your name on our shirt because it will be global TV coverage.
And when you said that to them, Dick, did they laugh at you when you go to the Premier League? Because obviously we were League One.
No, because they weren't that familiar with football at all, really. And so when I said, you know, when we get the stadium, and we then got it in terms of approval, otherwise I wouldn't have been talking to them about naming rights. I wasn't going to do that before we finally got approval. And it made sense to them that there was no reason whatsoever to put their name on our shirt. Yeah. As far as I was concerned, it would have been insulting them to ask a highly prestigious international company like American Express to actually put their name on a third level small English football team. Mm. You know, once you're in the Premier League, and I knew we would get to the Premier League, and Tony has made that happen, you know, but I knew if we got the stadium, we would get to the Premier League because I'd followed the club long enough to know it had the potential to do that.
Yeah, because I remember you talking after the playoff final in Cardiff, and you were saying you were looking around the stadium and you were seeing there was 35,000 Brighton fans in the stadium in Cardiff that day. And you were saying you could see not just the current shirt, but the shirts going back 10, 20, 30 years. And you realise that build it and they will come. All this latent support was always there. Because all the time we were with Dean, and obviously with Dean was obviously it was a life rafter, but it wasn't meant to last as long as it actually did. But there was the Ministry of Misinformation going around that you could never get tickets, even though actually, if you tried hard enough, you actually could. But people weren't just like, because they thought you couldn't get tickets. They didn't come.
Well, they came, as many of them as we could fit in to with Dean. Remember, with Dean was never empty or half empty. It was always full, because over the period between 2001, when we went to with Dean, we accumulated 14,000 names of people who bought a match ticket for this is in addition to season ticket holders.
In addition,
so there was 14,000 people who had come to a game at with Dean. You know, but obviously they were never there all together. But we accumulated that long list of 14,000 people, and we had about 2,500 to 3,000 season ticket holders as well. So it was well oversubscribed. The biggest crowd we ever had was against Man City, you know, in the
League Cup is good enough for us. We'll go generic here. Yeah.
Well, this was just after they'd just been taken over as well, wasn't it? So this was like the same week.
Yeah, well, so I actually had the temerity at that game to ask Sheikh Mansour, who was at the game, you know, the Abu Dhabi leader, I said, you know, he had done some homework on our club and he knew that we were fighting to get a new stadium. And I said, I'm sorry, you know, this is a rather cheeky of me, but, you know, you're going to get 45% of the gate receipts. This is the biggest crowd we will ever have at Widdin, which is just over 8,000, right? And, you know, would it be possible for you to give us your share of the gate receipts? Because, you know, it's a reasonable sum of money. And he looked at me and he said, we can't do that because we don't want to set a precedent. This is not a vanity project that we're doing. It's a serious football project. But what I will do, and he said this, are you getting bored, AD? No, he said, when you get your stadium, I will send our first team to play your first game at your stadium. And they honored that in terms of, they wrote me a letter. And basically, I passed that, you know, to Tony when, you know, when I handed over the reins of the club. And somehow or other, it didn't happen. But they were, you know, they were prepared to not charge us. Man City, by that time, had already won the league, you know, at least once. And they basically, you know, would have, the gate receipts for that game would have been into the millions. Yeah. And, you know, basically, they'd already won. They still hadn't won the, you know, Champions League, but they they definitely won the first time, the Premier League.
Let me ask you a historical question here, Dick. We're talking about with Dean and sort of, like, say, AD saying it was a life raft and what have you now. Did you, because I think we all have our sort of our memories and some of them are kind of rose-tinted, even if you did get soaked, trying not to look like a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Did you ever watch a game from the South Stand?
No, because I didn't need to get... I got soaked in the North Stand.
Now, all I'm thinking here is that actually, oddly enough, of all things, and I don't know if it's an irony or a perversion or whatever it might be, but the view that I had, certainly from the South Stand... and I was probably row S, I think it was. So what, 19, 20 rows back. I actually thought the view was pretty good.
It was.
And we enjoyed, you know, the games with Dean, especially obviously the later it got, the better it was. Well, it was actually the very earliest days and the very latest days were the best and the most fun. And I think it's probably why people kind of miss it.
It changed a few people's like viewpoints as well in regards to, you know, everyone always likes to go, loads of people like to go and stand behind the goal. But, you know, because of we always, with Dean, you couldn't do that. We had to have what we call the tactical view from there. People tend to prefer that these days.
The West End, you know, I used to call it the Worthing End because it was virtually in Worthing.
Well, practically in Devon.
Yeah, so when AD says it was behind the goal, it was a long, long way behind the goal. But I think it was actually, in terms of you know, sort of missing it, I think that the itch, I think you were there, you were there, AD. The itch for me was scratched about sort of missing with Dean earlier this season when we saw the under-21s playing against Vardenians at with Dean. And we think, okay, I mean, they sold 1,000 tickets, they got a few quid and good luck to them. But I think, like I say, by then the itch was scratched. And, you know, yes, we had a great time. Yes, we had some wonderful memories. And, you know, the promotions we had were wonderful. But for me, it was actually then, okay, emotionally time to move on. The whole thing of the romantic sort of bleary-eyed sort of, I suppose, soft focus version of it by then had gone. But I'm so glad I actually went back early this year just to see... the old girl.
Well, here's a question for you then, Al.
Go on.
Out of our current squad,
yes,
How many of them have played it with Dean?
James Milner must have done.
Actually, that's true. He did, yes. He played for Swindon, yes.
Yeah. How many of our current squad? Lewis Dunk did.
Yep.
Lewis did.
Who else?
That's about it.
I can tell you. I can tell you. I can tell you that there is one other.
Go on.
Harry Howe. He played in that game against Von Nunez.
Well, actually, you know, you mentioned.
What was it? The under eights game, was it?
Well, actually, you know, you're mentioning that Man City game. That was only 5 months after Harry was born.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I know you've got this. Have you got what was number one when he was born as well?
But, you know, no, I mean, that game was incredible because if you remember, you know, it went to penalties, didn't it? Oh, no. Did it? Yeah.
City game, did yeah. Yeah.
There was a pitch invasion led by somebody in the mobility scooter.
And we won that shootout. And then, of course, we had that other famous penalty shootout against Swindon.
Yes, we did.
Where Ben Roberts made, you know, a couple of great saves. One of their players put the ball, hit the crossbar.
Yep.
Adam Virgo actually hit the top underneath the just about 3 inches from the crossbar, under the crossbar.
Yeah, they'll count.
And the goal almost went into orbit, yeah. You know, because he hit it so hard.
He did smack it, yeah.
I thought we should phone Gatwick and warn incoming aircraft.
Well, we've still got that over Ojoa's penalty from a few years ago.
Well, actually, Adam, he's been on the show a few times, Dick. He does that. He did tell us once that every time he was shooting at that end, he used to aim for a train.
Yeah.
And well, the thing is, what I love about also that particular game, the Swindon game, is and it was the first time he came on and told us about it, is obviously Charlie Oakway takes a throw in and it gets nodded on by someone. I can't remember. I want to say John Pearce.
No, I think it was Charlie who headed it. Oh, it was Danny Cullett. We took the throw in and Charlie that headed it on, or vice versa.
That doesn't sound right.
They've both got the same anger.
Anyway, the ball came in.
Danny headed it on.
Yeah.
And Adam put it in.
Yeah. And what it was that Mark McGee had encouraged him forward. And he basically threw himself at it. And he said he closed his eyes. And what he was expecting was the keeper to come and completely wipe him out. And the keeper stayed rooted and he just managed to get his connection on it. But he was expecting to be taken out, you know, throwing himself at the ball.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. There's
and since then, he's dined out on it ever since.
Well, there was a thing where there's a Swindon supporting comedian. And I can't remember his name. It'll come to me in a second. But basically, well, it was
the striker.
Tommy Mooney. Hit the bar.
No, not Mooney.
Parkin,
yeah.
Who wound Danny up during that second leg, and he really wound Danny up, and you know, we're gonna smash you here tonight, and you know, we're gonna be playing at the Millennium Stadium, and I think Danny ultimately was able to take it out on him in a very, you know, sort of. We told you so. That, you know.
Yeah, I don't think Danny's particularly worried about those level of mind games, is he?
No, he wasn't. But you may not know this because if you were there, you weren't watching Sky Television.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. Here's one. If you remember, the chairman of Swindon was the jockey
Willie Carson.
Willie Carson, and I'd already. I mean, I really got on well with him. He's a lovely guy, right? And, of course, if you remember the first game at Swindon, we were very lucky to come away. You know, I think it was with a draw. You know,
no, we won. We won down there.
Was it? Yeah, Carpenter.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Scorching hot day.
Yeah. And they
were all wearing John Prescott masks.
They hit the woodwork in that first game about 5 or 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
So they came down to the with Dean, you know, expecting to win. And so basically, you know, and they were actually on the night of that second game, they were again the better team.
Well, they won 2-1, didn't they? But it was...
Well, they won 2-1 and it levelled and therefore it went into extra time. Mm. But the point is, so Willie Carson is sitting, and if you remember, it was pouring with rain.
Oh, yes.
And so everyone in the director's box at Withdean was as soaked as everyone in the south stand. Because if you remember, the roof of the north stand only went as far as the first running track, because you couldn't have one of the outside running track of the, you know, of the track, the you couldn't have that covered by a roof, because it gave an advantage to the runner in the outside lane, right?
Right.
So the roof only went as far as the start of the outside lane. So we all were just as wet. So I'm then doing an interview in front of the, you know, the media board with someone from Sky. And Willie had gone into, and he said to me, you know, at the end of the day, you lucky. You know, he was basically cursing that we'd actually beaten them. And anyway, he disappeared into their dressing room. And I didn't think any more of him at that point, because I was doing this interview. Then about 2/3 of the way through the interview, Willie came out of the Swindon dressing room. It was pouring with rain. He ran down the steps, came over to me, grabbed his microphone and said, "You lucky bastard, mate." live on Sky television.
That I've never seen. Yeah, for some reason, they tend not to...
Well, I don't think, you know, probably Willie's PR man would have said, "Can we delete that?" I did have a sympathy for him, and I patted him on the head, which was a fairly easy thing to do.
He's about the size of a rocking horse, wasn't he?
I remember another incident at Swindon. It wasn't in that in the first round of that playoff, but you know the Odds and Sods group.
Yes.
I was at the. We played a league game there, and at the end of it, I went down to this lounge because all the Odds and Sods were there, you know, supporting our team, and Willie Carson came down into this lounge, and Steve Darby, who's one of the leading people in the Odds and Sods. I think we won that game as well, or we drew, and he was going on about how lucky we were. And he then disappeared out of the room, the other side of the lounge. He was going to another lounge. Steve Darby picked up this big black waistband, you know, and ran out behind him. A minute later, he comes back holding this bag, and there's something's inside it. He was going, "Billy, be quiet."
Okay. Well, we've got to talk about last night, because I mean, you said to me afterwards. I mean, we've had some great games this season. We thought there was the Bournemouth game, which last minute goals, late goals. When you leave after one of those games, the feeling is so much sweeter. Mm-hmm. The beer tastes so much better. The food's so much nicer. And it was another one of those last night. But you said that this was your game of the season.
Oh, God, yeah. Like I say, with the Bournemouth game, I didn't think that we were that particularly good, or certainly not as good as we could have been. There was times last night, in fact, to be fair, both teams could cut through each other beautifully. You could see why Liverpool were champions. And, yeah, the both teams, I mean, there was some real... there was some real theatre going on with some of those players last night. I've got to say that, you know, I think he's taken his time to slip into the group. He's had injuries, but I thought Brian Gruder was absolutely on fire last night. He looked so confident.
Yeah. We found a new star last night because he has to play in midfield and he moves the ball so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
He was outstanding last night. He was our best player. And I think the point is that they were kind of almost on the beach, Liverpool, weren't they? They'd already won it, justifiably so. I hated some of our fans for booing when they walked on the pitch.
Unnecessary, really, totally unnecessary. It's totally unnecessary. I mean, come the day we ever win anything, I mean, let's have a bit of dignity.
It was so ridiculous for us to do that. I was really horrified by our fans who did that. But the point is that in that game, both sides threw caution to the winds, didn't they? There was hardly any defending. Everyone just threw everything forward. And it was a superb game of football. Yeah. And I don't know if you saw Slot being interviewed after the game. For some reason, I saw it. It must have been in the lounge where I was.
Mm.
He said, this is a fantastic game. He went on about how good a game it was. And he said, two terrific teams, you know, going at each other's throats. He said it was an absolutely brilliant game.
I'll tell you what it put me in mind of. And you've got to rewind 2 years ago. And I think City had already won by then. When we drew 1-1 at the end of that season, we're in Ciso, scored the worldie. But again, both teams were just throwing everything at each other. And this is when Guardiola was sort of kind of in love with De Zerbi. I mean, yes, there is a difference when, you know, what's the motivation for a team that's already won and done the job? And it is difficult. I mean, we struggled to, you know, we should have won the championship back in 2017. But, you know, by the time they got promotion, our lot hit the beach. So, you know, it's human nature and it's very difficult to keep it going. I mean, when we won the League One in the last season at Withdean, we won it with five games to go, and then we didn't win a game after that. It's difficult to get motivated. However, you can only play what's put in front of you. Mm. There was Gruder who was on fire. I thought Ayari grew into the game. I thought that I thought Estupiñán had one of the most psychedelic games I've ever seen. For whom, any time he was on the ball, he gave it away, and then his recovery tackle was just immense.
Yeah, he gave the ball away, which he tends to do quite often because of his enthusiasm, almost.
His overt enthusiasm, isn't it?
He won it back almost immediately. And, of course, Carlos Baliba did what he does. You know, he strode through midfield like a colossus, you know, and he's very hard to knock off the ball.
Mm.
I just hope we can keep him, you know, for another year, because Garuda is an Indonesian airline.
That's random.
But Garuda is an airline because I used to be involved in the airline business in advertising. It's just a little aside. And 1 year, there, chairman of Garuda Airlines wrote, obviously, Indonesian, the report, and it was translated into English. And he said in this report, this last year, our landings were roughly equivalent to our takeoffs.
Yeah. Garuda Indonesia.
Okay, well, talking about the
flights to Hurghada.
If we can get back to talking about the German chap instead, that was incidentally when he scored his goal at Wolves. I did have to laugh, and I didn't realise this was a German culture thing. When Hertzler said, "As a German, I find it difficult to give credit to another German," I'm thinking, "Are you lot really that efficient that you don't actually credit each other? You just get on and do it." But no,
Dick
he's
thought, Dick thought his performance was Wunderbar.
Wunderbar.
You don't get me on that subject, please.
Hello, Brian. No, and the point, the weird thing is that I've got to say that the probably for Gruder, the season is about to come to a finish just at the wrong point now, isn't it? Just when he's actually hitting his stride. And I'm going to make a confident prediction here. Given what happened earlier in the season in August, AD, because I'm still feeling smug about that one, I'm going to make a confident prediction that Gruder will be in the top three nominations for Player of the Season next season.
Yeah, maybe. But, I mean, this is something we've been saying all season,
Do you mean of the Premier League or Brighton?
Of Brighton. I'm not going to get too far above my station. No,
well,
just Brighton.
I think it's a good, you know, that's hardly a count.
But this is something which we've been saying all season, Al, and it's like, obviously... and Dick, you'll know this as well. Obviously, a lot of people see the amount of money that we spent in the last summer, and they're looking at the price tags and thinking, "Oh, right, these people should be hitting their straps immediately." But you have to look at the human element. Gruder is a classic example. 19 years old, moving out of Germany for the first time, moving out of the family home for the first time, different culture, different people. It takes a while to settle, and we've had that with a lot of the squad this season. And actually, to the latter stages, we're actually seeing these players are actually growing into the environment, they're growing into the team, and they're getting more starts. I mean, I'm talking like players like Matt O'Reilly, for instance.
You could be talking about Hertzler, frankly.
Yeah, and Matt Svefa, who've had a very like truncated season. It's all been very, very start, hasn't it, for him? But now they're getting a little bit of... more of a run in the team. We're actually seeing the best of them. And I'm just really... You're right, Al. I think that the season's come finishing too soon for these guys because they're just really hitting their straps at the moment. And it's
Can I say that with a caveat? I do agree. On the ball, I mean, there's still the decision-making they've got to learn. And you can see them learning game by game by game by game. What does worry me is our stuff off the ball. Now, we've got a decent press, but as soon as a team gets into the penalty area, it scares the bejesus out of me. Not because I just am easily scared bejesusly, but sometimes our defending has been pretty woeful. And I think that, you know, those are the things that still need to... So on the ball, you know, like I say, you saw it with the game last night. On the ball, at times, we could be absolutely majestic. Some of it was beautiful. Some of the one-touch stuff. Like I say, Gruder could see the angles. Belieber could see the angles. Ayari was, like I say, growing into the game. When Mitoma came on, you know, there's that piece of control that actually lit up the West Stand, the East Stand. Ha-ha, it's on our side. That's our one. It was absolutely brilliant. And I can't help thinking that the win was fully deserved. But obviously, there are still lessons to be learned.
I think that it was lovely because I had a lovely chat with JP at the awards evening. And, you know, he just won the Player of the Season award. And I said to him, in my opinion, you should have won it last season. I voted for him last season. And he chuckled and he said, that was always going to go to Pascal.
Yes.
Which is lovely. It's lovely, you know, sort of gesture because he said, you know, it wasn't a question of anyone else winning it.
A Dutchman being diplomatic towards a German. Yeah.
Okay. But actually, Dick, I mean, obviously, we're going to go back and talk about like some historic stuff shortly. But one of the things I was very disappointed about last night was the fact I've looked, I can't see if he was injured or not, but. There was no Alexis McAllister at all in the Liverpool squad last night. And obviously, when booing apart, when we gave him that guard of honour, I was really hoping that Alexis would have been there because he would have got a hero's welcome. And it's just all...
He would have got a tremendous reception.
And it's just all deal with...
That he has gone back to Argentina, you know, because they Slot gave him he reckoned he'd worked so hard the whole season that he deserved a little bit of time off, you know, at the end of the season. Mm. And I think I think everyone was disappointed, AD, with that, because they would have given him a thunderous reception. You know, he would have been cheered to the echo. God, do we miss him?
Yeah, when you look back to, say, the Exeter Street, for instance, back then, and you're looking at Robbie Ryan out scoring that goal, did you think, oh, one day we're going to have a player that's going to be playing for Brighton when he wins the World Cup?
Well, of course not. You know, I mean, I'm a dreamer, and I'm, as I've said earlier, I knew we'd get to the Premier League, you know, when we got once we got a stadium, we would get to the Premier League. But as you say, to have a player playing for Brighton who's playing alongside, you know, just about the greatest player in the world, and winning the World Cup, and no, of course I couldn't dream of that. You know, what I remember is, this is the comparison, Paul Heywood, you know, the Telegraph writer.
Yes.
And I think he's still at the Telegraph. He's been around a few other papers, but I remember him. You remember when we had our centenary at the Brighton Centre?
Yeah.
And he wrote a wonderful piece for that programme, for that event, which said, sitting in the San Siro, worrying about the Albion, right? Brilliant headline. And of course, it was because at that time, you know, I still hadn't managed to overthrow Archer, right? And of course, the reality now is that if we get into Europe, we could well be playing at the San Siro easily. That means Inter or AC Milan, you know. So, yeah, the team has come almost beyond anyone's expectations.
Well, it'd be a lovely arc, I think, if Paul Heywood could actually join us when we play AC Milan and spend a bit of time worrying about Edgar Street. Actually, okay. There's something I want to take you back to from something earlier in the show that it was a name that AD mentioned when we were at Swindon. And obviously, you've not been on the show for a while, and since then we've lost him. But I know you talk fairly quickly but warmly about him. Give us your lowdown on your dealings with John Prescott.
Oh, well, he was... I won't have a bad word said about him, because the Tory press clearly, you know, lampooned him. But the fact is that if it wasn't for Prescott, we would not be playing at Thelma in the Amex. Because when he told me this after we finally got the second approval, right? If you remember, I invited him to a league game against Hull the with team. And he told me, it was interesting because we sat on a round table, and at one point he asked everyone to leave apart from me. And he said, I want to just talk to you about something. And he told me something. And then he said, I don't want you to publicize that in any way until I'm not here.
Right.
And it was the fact that when the public inquiry, the first public inquiry inspector recommended that we should not play at Thelma, right? And normally the minister always does what the public inquiry inspector does, you know, recommends. Mm-hmm. But Prescott told me he couldn't understand why there didn't appear to be a lot of local support, for the stadium. And then he said to me, I had a civil servant in my office who lived in Lewis. And he said, I think that he was not giving me all the information. So when the inspector recommended what we all then thought would happen, because the local plan inspector was sitting next to him in that first inquiry, Prescott, 99 times out of 100, the minister just rubber stamps what the inspector is recommending. But he thought, it can't be right, you know. And so he opened the inquiry again. And that's unprecedented. And of course, with a new inspector. And he said, the right result then manifested itself, because, you know, the whole due diligence was done again. And of course, it cost us a lot of money and time in having to go through that process. But, you know, dear John, if he hadn't opened that inquiry, that second inquiry, we wouldn't be playing at the with thing.
We might would be playing at with thing.
We might still be there. Yeah. I don't think we'd be in the Premier League then.
But no, we wouldn't be in the Premier League then.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As ever, we are brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited, Al.
Yes, we are. You can find them on 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. As we've now realised, our American friends who listen to this podcast know verbatim. Yes, you can get all your flowers, your gifts, your champagne, your chocolates, your things that, well, any message you want to send to anyone. I think that if anyone's got a bouquet of flowers that's in the shape of a flicked V, then do send them to Bill Archer. We haven't forgotten. We haven't forgiven. And of course, if you're an Albion season ticket holder, then you'll automatically get 20% discount. Thank you very much indeed to David Costa of Flowers Unlimited for sponsoring the show. So do head down there, should you, well, unless you're a hay fever sufferer, in which case is a place to avoid. But apart from that, for all your floral needs, head to Flowers Unlimited in Portland Road, Hove.
There's a chemist next door. You can get some pyrotechnics.
Yeah, must be easily, yeah.
yeah. Okay, right. Okay, so...
Alan, sorry, AD, just for a second. Alan, I wish I'd employed you as a voiceover artist in commercials, because the way you did that was very good. I was very impressed.
Thank you. It's only taken me 30 goes to get it right.
Yeah. 8:29.
Yeah, take 29. Oh, do I have to? Brandy.
Yeah. It's all right. I can do a shirt of the week if you like.
But, no, please don't. Yeah. Yeah, because you struggle with English, let alone Romanian shirts.
Well, that's true. But yeah. Okay, well, I just want to quickly rattle through this last night again, because, I mean, it was a substitute appearance. And what an amazing cameo from the wonderful birthday boy himself, which was Karu Mutoma yesterday.
Was it his birthday, was it?
It was indeed.
Yeah, that piece of school. I mean, I thought that Van Hecker had overhit that pass. But Mutoma just made it look as though it was
unbelievable. But if you remember, for me anyway, the highlight of the season was when Bart the Bruggen launched it down the middle of the pitch, you know, and Kairu, it came over his shoulder. He trapped it in one movement as he was swerving past the last defender. It caught it and swerved past the defender all in one movement, and then slotted it home. And that was, you know, it ought to be in the running for the goal of the season again.
Well, I believe it will be.
No, I know it is. I know it is as far as we're concerned, but I'm talking about the match of the day.
Yeah. Well, I've got to say that actually when that was decided as goal of the month at the time that he scored, Shearer did actually mention that is definitely a goal of the season contender. We'll find out this Sunday.
Yeah. No, it was what you mean in... they'll probably recall a Lineker goal that he scored for Everton, you know, 35 years ago.
Well, I challenge any one of those strikers in their heyday to do what Mutoma did that day.
Well, it was genius.
It was genius.
That said, though, Al, I mean, we talked about this on the show last week, didn't we? About like the fact that Matoma goal that's just won the goal of the season. And I said, well, maybe not. And you said, why? And I said, well, we might not have scored the goal of the season yet. And last night, I actually reckon we very nearly did. I think...
Are you talking about the one where Welbeck ultimately slipped over?
Yeah. I mean, that whole move was just an absolute delight.
Move. You're right, AD. It was a wonderful move. It was really unfortunate that Danny slipped, you know, at the crucial moment.
Absolutely.
Mind you, when Salah missed that open goal, that move was unbelievably good by Liverpool.
Yes.
And both teams were doing that on a regular basis, but that particular, those two moves were beyond dreamland as far as football fans are concerned.
Well, you know, I mean, even Liverpool's first goal was the play by, you know, he got past Estupiñán and then just with a wiggle of a shoulder, he sent Webster to the shops and gave Elliot a simple tap in. Yeah. You know, you look at it from a defensive point of view and you think, oh, come on, why didn't you do it? But you know full well it's the kind of stunt that Matoma or Adingra or Minte can pull off on their day. And I actually have to say that particular sort of just the slightest dip of the shoulder, the slightest movement can send, you know, it can wrong foot a defender. And Webster, who's no mug, he's actually had a decent second half of the season. He was completely done by that.
You know why he's had a much better second half of the season, in my view? Because he's playing on the left side of central defence. It was like, you remember Adam Elab a few years ago? Gus played him left side of the central defence, and so has Lewis Dunk has played in that position. And with Webster, all of a sudden he's got a different perspective on the on the pitch. You know, I think that's the reason that he's played so well, playing on the left side.
Yeah,
that's an interesting thought. I hadn't really considered it that way, but yeah, there's something in that certainly. Mm.
Okay, now Dick, you have been involved in your tenure with the club. You've been very much involved in this particular dynasty. I mean, you named one of them a manager. One of them was a central defender for you.
I think Danny played as well.
Last night we saw an extra addition into the Hinchinwood dynasty, although his name's Harry Howe, but the cousin of Jack. Actually, you had a conversation online with a Palace fan yesterday, didn't you, about who actually his dad is, Jack's dad is. But
yeah, I think it's just someone getting the family tree wrong. But
yeah,
I actually thought it was going to be written in the stars. I don't know about you, Dick, because, you know, you've been in charge of the club, but we can only, well, we're dreamers, but we're not fantasists. But actually, you know, Harry coming on at the age of, you know, seven or whatever he is, and scoring the winner, and he nearly did.
But he's the dummy in his mouth.
He did, yeah. Apart from that, it'd have been fine. Yeah, it was the pram he couldn't jump out of quickly enough. But yeah, that Hinchinwood dynasty is actually, it looks like it's going to be set fair for some time, doesn't it? Especially as if Jack's going to be a dad again soon, going to be a dad soon.
Yeah. Well, and of course, Adam is playing tonight, and York are playing in the playoff to get to League Two.
Yes. And you know, I don't think anyone who saw Worthing last season or the previous three or four seasons is surprised that York are doing as well as they are.
They're not, because he is a very good manager. And I think that I understand that Jack is a very good leader in the dressing room. You know, not many people have heard that, but I've heard it recently that he's very articulate and like a natural leader.
When Adam was part of the playing squad, and obviously we're talking sort of, you know, nearly 20 years ago or 20 years ago now, did you have an inkling? I don't know if you sort of, you know, knew him well enough. Did you have an inkling as to what a leader he could be?
No. What I could see was that he was a very good reader of the game because his positional almost from day one, you know, in the first team, was brilliant. He was always in the right place at the right time. And of course, he wasn't that tall as a central defender, but his reading of the game was brilliant. And I don't think you ever, rarely did you see him balloon the ball out of defence. He always passed it out of defence.
Mm.
And was a very, very fine player. He played 20 under 21s, didn't he?
He did.
He did. And he did score a fabulous own goal once. but it's not going so well for him right now. They're losing 3-0. So there we go.
Oh, thank you. Right, that's ruined everyone's evening. Right, let's we're getting to the near the end of this hour here. Now, Dick, if I've heard things correctly, you were conned into going into a particular awards evening the other day.
Well, probably conned. I may have said that, but that's slightly wrong expression. There was a brilliant piece of subterfuge, right?
Difference between a con and a subterfuge. Yeah, go on. I'll buy that.
Yeah, but I like the word subterfuge because you know what subterfuge is. And it's, you know, basically a very brilliant underhand operation that is successful, you know. And of course, Paul Camlin called me up and said that they wanted to invite me to the Players Awards. And I said, oh, what do I owe that pleasure? Why are you inviting me? Because I hadn't been invited, you know, ever since I stood down. And anyway, so he said, he said, will you come? I said, well, why do you want me there? He said, because we want to present an award to Paul Samra. You know, and I thought, well, Paul, I think, deserves it because he was, as you know, a lot of people know, he was one of the absolute leading lights in the campaign to get Falma. He was the chairman of the Falmer for All group because I said to Martin, you know, to Martin Perry, you and I will be on the committee, but we need to have a fan as the chair of it. And Paul was brilliant in that role.
No one better.
Tireless and very efficient, very intelligent. You know, he ticked so many boxes. In fact, once he actually came to me when I first took over, he came to see me at my house and he wanted to become the chief executive. This is before I had a chief executive.
Right.
And I said, Paul, you're a partner in a firm of City accountants. You know, you're a very senior partner. I think they used to go to work with a rolled umbrella and a bowler hat.
And a copy of the Times.
Yes.
Pardon?
And rolled out a copy of the Times.
Yeah. So anyway,
Pink Carnation.
So I said, A, you've got a wonderful career, and B, you're going to be more valuable to me outside the club than inside the club, you know. Mm. And so when Paul Camlin said, we want to award to Paul Samra, I thought, yeah, he deserves it.
Mm.
So anyway, I said, well, I'll come. And of course, what happened after JP got the, you know, Player of the Season award, Jim White made an announcement along the lines of, we've got another award, a special award for a special person. They'd asked me to go down near the stage when JP was getting his award, right? And so there I was standing near the stage. And so JP finished that. So Jim White then called Tony to come back on the stage, which he did, and then Paul Samra. So I'm standing there, right by the stage, thinking, oh, now Jim's going to ask me to come up and present this award to Paul. And, you know, and then all of a sudden the lights went down and they started playing that film. And I went up on eventually, because Ian Hart came on the stage as well, didn't he, at that time. And I said to Paul, you know, I swore at Paul under my breath. Yeah, that was a brilliant piece of subterfuge. Because I absolutely had no inkling. I mean, I can think on my feet, you know, in so I had no notes or anything. I knew I obviously would have to speak. And I, you know, I had no notes. I did, you know, crack that, you know, joke about one night stand. I thought, you know, knowing, you know, how to public speak, in a sense, you get the audience on your side. I mean, they were on my side anyway, but, you know, the saying to Tony, you know, thank goodness you didn't name a stand after me, because one night stand at the Amex, you know, would not go down that well.
It's one of your better gags, Dig. It's one of your better gags.
What? But what about the one at the end when I said, because Jim, in wrapping the whole thing up, he said, Dick, what do you think of this evening and the club that you saved? What? And I said, I'm as excited as anyone about the future prospects of the club, you know, and I'm 87 years of age. I said, so Tony and Paul, I looked towards where Paul, you know, Barb was sitting. I said, carry on the good work, chaps, because you'll then deserve a knighthood.
Yes. it's an honour that you get to bestow on them, not King Charles.
Yeah.
No, I mean, obviously, you know, it's clearly a well-deserved award, but also, I mean, how do you feel about the fact that the award itself for outstanding achievement, and obviously the criteria for that are going to be set year on year, but the Dick Knight Award for outstanding achievement, what does that make you feel like?
Well, I feel very proud, obviously, and I wrote to Tony thanking him, and I wrote to Paul Barber, and both of them, you know, were very effusive in their congratulations. And I said to Tony that I intend to stay around for a few years, you know, so I can present that award. And then a member of my family would carry on that tradition when I'm no longer here. And so, you know, that my family was so proud of that. Because it's a lovely thing to be able to, you know,
bestow,
recognize.
Absolutely.
Bestow. But of course, there isn't one way of looking at it also, which is every year I give it to someone else will devalue what I did.
So eventually you'll give it to us and all you'll hear is a barrel being scraped.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen, Dick. Absolutely.
Right. No, well. No, I was delighted, and it was a brilliant, you know, secret, well kept, that they managed to keep it from me.
Yeah. Well, from us to you, thoroughly well deserved. The standing ovations that they got. I mean, you know, the likes of Jim White, who's not necessarily part of the club, but I think has an inkling as to sort of like certainly to your role and everything like that. I mean, the look on his face was one of, wow, what a club this is. So, you know, from us to you, many congratulations, thoroughly deserved and absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, Jim, I totally agree.
I sat next to him during the meal before the awards, and he works, of course, with Simon Jordan.
Yeah.
And when Jim told Simon he was coming down to Brighton to give these awards, Simon said, well, are you going to see Knight? And he said, yeah, presumably, I don't know whether he knew at that time there was going to be this special award.
Yeah.
But Simon Jordan said, give Dick my best. He was one of the only people I got on with in football. It was a lovely evening. And as I say, all the more enjoyable because it came literally out of the blue.
And white.
Blue and white. Yeah.
Okay, but with that, that is all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much to Dick Knight. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Cheers. Bye. One of these.